Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with...
Thomas Kryn.
And...
Bauer Yussi.
And they are the co-authors of the new book, Freddie Steinmark, Faith, Family, Football, of the new movie, My All-American. But tell me about how this sort of works, the interplay with the book and movie. The script is written first, correct? Based on a bunch of different research of a bunch of different sources. But then tell me how this coincides.
Well, the book was written to coincide with the release of the movie, My All-American. They both deal with the subject of Freddie Joe Steinmark. His mother felt very confident that we needed to tell Freddie's whole story. So did the producers of the movie. Mm-hmm. And so they just coincide. We had full access to the family's archives and every member of the Steinmark family in order to write the book.
Gotcha. And I guess before we go too much into the weeds on book versus movie and all the rest and even the everything else, we should go into the life story and what we're actually talking about here. Freddie participated in it was December 1969, right? The so-called game of the century, Texas over Arkansas. And then 2 days afterwards, he was diagnosed with cancer and started a long national conversation on that. But instead of me explaining it, why don't one of you guys sort of give me the brief synopsis?
You want me to do that, Tom?
Sort of the plot of the book, if you will.
No, you, Bauer, I think you should do that.
Freddie and I grew up. We were friends and teammates all through childhood and through high school.
Where is this?
In Wheat Ridge, Colorado.
Okay.
He dreamed of playing football for Notre Dame because he was a strong Catholic. But he was undersized. And Notre Dame said, Freddie, you're too small. And the truth is, all of the major Division I schools said, you're too small. Except Darrell Royal, the great coach of the University of Texas Longhorns, who looked at Freddie and didn't see his size. And so Freddie went to Texas to play football. Promised his father that he would start every game he played there, which was a pretty big promise considering his size. And he was an outsider. Texas never really recruited outside of Texas. They didn't have to.
What position was he?
He played safety.
Nice.
So he gets to Texas, and sure enough, he's exactly what Coach Royal thought. He was 150 pounds of heart. He became only the second sophomore to start for Darrell Royal after Tommy Nobis, who was the greatest linebacker, probably the greatest player Royal ever coached. In 1969, Texas was playing Arkansas in what was called the Game of the Century. President Nixon was there sitting in the stands. Freddie had been playing with a pain in his leg the entire season. 2 days after that game, which Texas won 15-14 in a thrilling comeback, Freddie went to a doctor to see what was going on in his leg. Thought it was a bone chip. It turned out to be a bone tumor. The treatment was the urgent amputation of his left leg. And it was the way he dealt with that devastation that had such a profound effect on all of his teammates, people all over the world who were following him in the news. It had an effect on Congress, who got really busy writing the National Cancer Act after Freddie lost his life, and President Nixon, who signed it into law, and that began America's war on cancer.
Wow. How did you gentlemen link up to write this book? Because obviously you grew up with him and you knew him well and went through life and death with him, but how did you actually get
I was blessed to become friends with Freddie's younger brother, Sammy Steinmark. Sammy was a coach at the Air Force Academy, and I crossed the path of Sammy Steinmark and became friends with the Steinmark family. And in those, you know, travels, Bauer and I became fast friends. And we had a lot of mutual talents and a lot of mutual practice, you could say, in the media industry. And as a result, Bauer and I, as the project came together, Bauer and I, you could say, pooled our resources to make what we felt was a real magical story in this book, Freddie Steinmark.
How long ago did you set out to write it? Like, how long was this in the works, in the making, I guess?
We did research for a couple of years. And we were consulting with the movie producers. And actual writing the book, it took us about 3 months. But we worked a lot of 20-hour days in that 3 months. And we had a lot of help from people helping us with research and editing. And we never could have done it that fast. But we wanted the book to be out when the movie came out so that they would feed off of each other. And we also had an incredible publisher in the University of Texas Press. To get a book published that fast is virtually impossible, but they...
It was the publishing of the century.
they will love that, Jason. In a lot of ways, it was such an incredible feat. They just all pitched in and went to work. And normally it would take 18 months to publish a book from the time they get the manuscript. And we did it in less than a year. And that included writing the manuscript.
Yeah. So.
And just to add on to that, it's important to recognize, you know, Freddie is an icon at the University of Texas. Freddie is the guy who the scoreboard at the University of Texas is named for and was recently rededicated. When the ball players go out on the field, they tap Freddie's plaque at the base of the scoreboard as they go through the tunnel out in the stadium.
He's there, play like a champion today.
He is their icon. And as Bauer said, we were blessed that the entire University of Texas rallied around this project. Not only the University of Texas Press, but the University Athletic Department. They were powerful supporters of this, and by all those elements coming together and by, you know, really telling a full and what we think is an authentic, complete story of Freddie's life from when he was a child with Bauer through to the day he passed away, and the Texas senators went onto the floor and spoke with passion about Freddie's life. This was the set of resources that were put together that made it possible to happen so quickly.
And obviously I want to go at it more from an entertainment angle, but I can't hide the fact that I'm just a football nut. So I want to, while you were on the subject of Texas, do you know, were there any references to Freddie during the sort of greatest, you know, game of the century upset, that sort of comeback mindset? Was that referenced at all during the Vince Young upset of USC? Like, you know, was that come from behind spirit? Were there any speeches on that? Do you know?
Right. And I think two things, and Bauer can talk a little bit about a number of the players that were on the field with Freddie that day in December 69. But what I would say to you is that Freddie's spirit lives not only in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, but it lives in Austin, Texas. And Freddie's spirit is manifested on the field that December 6th. Bauer, tell the story of how Freddie Freddie saved the game with a penalty.
In that Arkansas game, he was playing in a lot of pain. But Coach Royal said Freddie was so smart, he wanted him in the game, even if he was at 90%. And Royal was a little bit superstitious, too. That defensive backfield had been tremendous all season long.
Like all good coaches.
Yeah. Let's not mess with this thing. It's working. Freddie realized that Bill Montgomery, the quarterback of Arkansas, had noticed that he had a bit of a limp, and he knew they were going to come at him. And sure enough, he cheated his position. If you look at old footage of that game, he's often not in view because he's playing so far back. But Chuck Dykus, who was the great All-American receiver at Arkansas, had him beat. And if Chuck Dykus caught the pass, scored, it would be impossible for Texas to come back. And so Freddie lunged at him and grabbed his jersey and drew a penalty.
Intentional pass interference.
Yeah, absolutely. So interestingly enough, one of the greatest plays he ever made was a penalty. And sure enough, Arkansas got the ball on about the Texas 12-yard line. Two plays later, another Texas guy intercepted the pass. Wow. And it gave Texas an opportunity to then go the other way. And eventually they did score.
Maybe a penalty, but it's a heads-up play, really. It's using all the rules to your advantage, really.
It was a tremendous heads-up play.
Wow.
And that game was the first time Freddie's father had ever seen him play on television.
Really?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine now with so many games.
Yeah.
But he was at home in Denver, Colorado with the family watching, and when he saw the penalty, he just couldn't believe what had happened. But he also realized that Freddie had probably just saved the game and an opportunity for Texas to, you know, have time enough to score. So
the idea of TVs back then too, that would have been the same month as moon landing, wouldn't it, of 69?
It was. Well, the moon landing was in July. Okay. And but yeah, a lot of things were happening then, you know. The world
people
was
gathering
in
a lot more of communal experience watching.
Yeah,
these
the
things.
You know, the campus, there was unrest everywhere. The Vietnam War was going, and So that's one of the reasons that Freddie became such an important figure to the public, because he was somebody they could attach themselves to and be emotionally involved in and care about. And it wasn't all the negative stuff. Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting.
And Jason, just to build on the football side, imagine, so you are part of what becomes the national championship team. You reach that pinnacle that you've aspired to your whole life with your teammates. And then 2 days after that game, you are told you might have cancer. And 6 days after that game, you lose your leg in an amputation at MD Anderson to cancer. And Nixon, who, as Bauer said, Nixon, on December 1st, Nixon had instituted the first draft lottery in over 20 years. On December 6th, imagine this, Nixon is 10 rows up on the 50-yard line in the stadium. And then 6 days after that, Nixon calls you in your hotel room and says, How are you okay, pal? You know, how did the surgery go? And then Nixon brought him to the White House and made him a spokesperson. And Freddie took all of those elements that were part of his life, that discipline, that commitment, that perseverance, and he applied them now to his new challenge, this enormous challenge of cancer. And that's how he became such a lightning rod and sparked a conversation about cancer that really hadn't been had.
Yeah.
And that conversation grew into what became the National Cancer Act of 1971.
Wow. Yeah, when you have the president calling you and inviting you to the White House right after, I mean, that just shows how influential he was and how famous he was to the country.
Bob Hope called him. Wow. Freddie took a call from Bob Hope and said hi and immediately gave the phone to his mother because she was a big Bob Hope fan.
she'll get more out of this than I will. Oh,
yeah.
That's great. Well, I mean, I guess shortly after that, what we had, I just want to start pivoting into the, you know, the movie and stuff a little too. But, you know, you had Brian Song, which was also a cancer story, Brian Piccolo, right?
They actually became pen pals.
Really?
Brian Piccolo wrote Freddie a letter, which is in the book, by the way. Brian watched the Arkansas game, and a few weeks after that, he wrote Freddie a letter and said, I watched the game on TV, and basically said, I more than anyone probably know how you feel right now, and the thing is, what happens to us now is up to God, you know, yeah. But thinking about you, and
wow,
yeah, it happened all at
and
the same time.
And that's in the book?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's one of the reasons that a movie about Freddie wasn't made immediately, because Brian's song came out, and so...
Right.
You know,
stole
maybe wait a while.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then people ask us all the time, well, why did it take so long to get this book out in this movie? It's been 44 years since Freddie died. The biggest reason is that it's a very painful memory for his mother. Mm-hmm. And when she asked that we write this book, I was a little reluctant because I had known the family since I was 8 years old, and I knew how painful it was. And in talking with her, I mean, I could just see it. We all remember all the great things Freddie did, all the fun stuff. Her memory begins with the last 48 days of his life, in which he suffered greatly. And she didn't want to go back there. And then...
It's hard to dig that back up.
Really hard. But then she just realized that his story could help people. It's an uplifting, inspiring story. And just to add on to that, people say, how did they get through this? I mean, how did the family stay together? I mean... And Freddie, he was upbeat. He changed his goals. He was going to play golf instead of football. And it was because of the subtitle of the book is Faith, Family, Football. Faith was his biggest.
In that order?
Yeah.
And Bauer, tell the story about his cousin, Janet.
His cousin Janet, when they first heard about Freddie going to MD Anderson, she was very upset. And Freddie was such a good guy, Jason. It's hard to tell people and get them to believe that he was such a good guy. Her parents came back from Houston from visiting, and she overheard them talking that she was about 19 at the time. She overheard them talking that Freddie wasn't doing very well, and she yelled at them, and she said, if anything happens to Freddie, I'll never believe in God ever again. Well, then his leg got amputated, and that was it. She was done. No faith. At Christmas of 1970, he went home to his mother's, and they had a big family feast, the Steinmarker and Marchetti families. And she said she was so angry that this had happened to him, and she was afraid he would see that. And she said, but he came home. He didn't look good. Yet he was laughing with everyone and talking and telling stories. And she said, I just kept listening to him. And she said, I don't know what happened. I just, something came over me and I believed again.
Faith restored.
Yeah. I just thought, if he can be like that, then how can I not believe? So.
And how many years after that did he pass away?
He lived 17 months after his leg was amputated. The doctors thought that he might live a year. So he was a fighter. He was a competitor in everything he did, including battling cancer. And I'm sure that that had a lot to do with President Nixon's fondness for him and attachment to him. And, you know, we should point out that at Freddie's funeral, President Nixon's personal representative pulled his mother aside and said, Gloria, is there anything the president can do to comfort you? And she said, yes, tell him to fight cancer like he fights all these other wars. That's the only way we'll beat it. Very shortly after that, Congress got into gear, wrote the National Cancer Act, President Nixon signed it into law, and that began America's war on cancer.
And where do we, I mean, that Nixon's been a while ago, where do we stand today in sort of public policy cancer fighting?
Well, tonight, Tom, you might want to talk about this, but tonight we actually have the acting associate director, assistant director of the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Norman Coleman, will be with us. And he'll talk a little bit about that, cool. Where we are today and what lies ahead.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly right. I think that it's a long fight. Cancer is a disease we've not yet cured.
It's a beast, man.
But by the same token, I think great strides have been made, and I think it'll be exciting to hear Dr. Coleman's update and what the future might be for cancer research.
The you know, the significance of Freddie, Jason, is that he reframed our national conversation about cancer. When he got cancer, it was very much like in 1983 when AIDS showed up. Nobody wanted to talk about it. You know, you kept very quiet about it. Cancer was like that in 1969. The cancer wards were very sad places. Everyone there was going to
die. Arthur Ashe or a Magic Johnson to kind of have a face to it.
That's right. That's exactly right. And he
Lou Gehrig, Pride of the Yankees, ALS. You know, it's very similar.
It's exactly right.
Very similar.
Exactly. So he became the face of the fight.
Yeah.
And
in fact, Bauer, tell the story of in terms of, you know, how to fight it from a optimistic perspective. Tell the story of Coach Royal and Freddie in the cancer ward at MD Anderson with the nurse.
Royal went to see him one day, and he wasn't in his room. The doctors told him, you know, you can't go to the Cotton Bowl. That's out of the question. That's only 3 weeks from now, and you've got 200 stitches. Forget that. So Royal went to visit him one day, and he wasn't in his room. And he found a nurse, and he said, I can't find Freddie. Have they moved him? And she said, oh, no, he's working on his crutches. And Royal couldn't imagine that he was doing that. And she said, let me tell you something. This is a very sad place. Everybody in here is going to die, but he won't let us be sad. We look forward to coming to work to see him because he just lights up the place. And Coach Akers, who was Freddie's defensive backs coach at Texas, said to us one day, Freddie always lit it up. If you were in a sour mood or not doing well and he saw you, he'd light you up. Coach Ellington, who was the grandfatherly kind of coach at Texas and dealt with, you know, problems the boys were having, would sit in his office, and if he saw Freddie walking by, he would call him in there. And Akers said that 5 minutes later, Ellington and Freddie would come out of Ellington's office, and they were both laughing and all lit up.
Well, it says a lot that he was like that before the cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely.
It's not like you're just putting on a happy face and being rah-rah, you know, but that's him. That's, you know,
that was him.
His whole life.
That's exactly right. The cancer changed his life, obviously, but it didn't change him. It didn't change his spirit. In terms of lighting it up, there's another interesting aspect to this. Freddie's father always said to him, you know, if you're not going to play to win, don't turn on the scoreboard. In 1972, the University of Texas dedicated their new scoreboard to Freddie. It's the Freddie Steinmark Memorial Scoreboard. And just 2 weeks ago at the Kansas game, we had a ceremony to rededicate the scoreboard to him.
Is that because of timing with the movie, or, you know, or
what? Yeah, because in Austin, Texas, you know, they're so excited about the movie, and obviously it's a great movie. It, you know, really promotes Texas, and
yeah.
So there he was lighting
Marshall
it up.
Probably did the same thing for Marshall, or give any example.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
They like it's a good excuse to kind of talk about it again.
Right.
And, you know, bring it back.
Right.
Down.
Right.
Talk about, well, we kind of pivoted to that. So talk about your involvement with the movie. Obviously, like we said, it's based on a bunch of different sources of research. And your book was sort of written as sort of a parallel document, if you will. But how did that, how did you guys actually consult with the filmmakers?
Well, we Bud Brigham is the executive producer of the movie, and he's a great guy. He's an Austin oil man. We established a relationship with him, and we actually, you know, entered into a series of agreements with him to basically help, and he was going to help us, you know, get the book published. And Tom and I are also producing a documentary, and so he's helped with that.
On the same subject?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. It was important to them to have our input, particularly mine, because I knew Freddie so well. I mean, from 8 years old on. Angelo Pizzo, who wrote the script for the movie and directed it, didn't have the benefit of ever knowing Freddie. And, you know, as we were just talking about, he was such a great guy. It's hard to get people to understand that he was like that. So that, I think that was very helpful to Angelo and to all of them, really. And then Freddie's younger brother, Sammy, who was 7 years younger, spent a lot of time on the movie set helping Finn Wittrock know how to be Freddie. Mm. At Wheat Ridge High School, they have posters all over the school of Finn Wittrock in his Wheat Ridge uniform. Mm. And the headline on the poster is, "Be Like Freddie." Nice. And they realized one day, all these kids want to be like Freddie, but they really don't know what that means.
Right.
And so we did an evening with Freddie Steinmark and friends.
Oh, cool.
And we had a player from Texas come up there, Rick Neighbors, and a bunch of guys that Freddie played with when we were younger. And we spent 2 hours talking about Freddie, how to be like Freddie. Yeah. So,
what was it like... So Aaron Eckhart plays the coach,
yes,
is that right?
Okay. Yes.
I mean, did you have any interactions with him? Have you met him yet?
I did not. Okay. Tom, I don't think you did either, did you?
No.
Then that doesn't matter then. But what talk about what it was like seeing the movie for the first time. I mean, I assume you guys have gotten some screenings before it hit the public. I think it hit the nationwide Friday.
Correct.
So, you know, when did you first see it, and what was it like sitting there and seeing, hey... A lot of millions of eyeballs are going to see this. It's got to be pretty cool.
It was kind of odd for me because it was about Freddie. And, you know, there's not too many people that can go to a movie about somebody they really knew very well. And so that was interesting. It's, you know, it's very emotional. It's hard to, you know, get everything just right. I mean, you can't do that in a 2-hour movie, but it gets you. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It was kind of a surreal experience.
And with respect to the movie, I think that there are some components that are so moving, especially all the emotion at the end. And it was in a way to me a reminder of our book. You know, so many pieces of this book were emotionally wonderful to write, and I think emotionally difficult for Bauer because he lived it. And you could imagine the gut-wrenching feel of your best friend having to face life's ultimate challenge at the age of 21, and how does that register with you as a 21-year-old? And putting all that on the page, on the written page for Bauer, I know was a challenge, but by the same token, it fused our book with a fabric of authenticity that makes it magical, and from my perspective.
Is there anything we haven't covered? Is there anything else you want to say about the book?
I think Freddie's legacy, certainly in part, is that everything you do in life matters. He never wasted time. He was always busy doing something, reading, studying, working out.
Because we don't have much of it.
We don't have much of it. And he was a very selfless, humble guy. Sometimes I think about the fact, how would he be in the world we live in with selfies and all of this social media stuff?
His camera would be pointing the other way.
It would be pointing the other way. And I think that he would be very uncomfortable with it. He never really liked the limelight. You know, he when sports writers would talk to him after a game and say, "Oh, Freddie, that was so great, the run, blah," he'd always say, "You know, my teammates made it all possible." Just he was always deflecting attention away from himself. And so you can imagine now he's going to be the spokesperson for the American Cancer Society, and he's everywhere. Yeah. Everybody wanted him to come talk to them. That took a lot for him because it just was so not him, and yet he did it. And, you know, Father Bomar, his priest at Texas, went with him everywhere. His little brother Sammy went as much as he could, and he did it. You know, he just saw that his job was to increase the awareness of cancer and the need for research. And man.
Humility is probably the most underrated quality out there.
Right, right.
It's a great observation.
Yeah. The one thought in my mind, too, is that, you know, Freddie was an individual who, you know, practiced what he believed. In other words, his faith was more in actions than his faith in words. Right. And by his faith and actions, you know, Freddie became a role model that is needed timelessly. And there are many timeless lessons that can be learned from Freddie. And those lessons include, you know, honoring your mother and your father. They include hard work equals results. And they include honoring your faith. And if some of those things can be extracted from Freddie's story and be passed on through Congress, that's a great thing.
Well, in no small part, thanks to you guys, now it is timeless. So it'll be out there, and people hopefully read the book and then see the movie in either order. And his legacy is going to continue. And hopefully, even just by little convos like this, we can keep chipping away at cancer, because it's everyone here
touches everyone.
Has been touched by some form of it.
And everyone has a connection to Freddie because of that. Because he set us on the path to find a cure for cancer in all of its insidious forms, with the belief that it was a disease we could beat.
And one last comment I would say, and I'm going to ask Bauer to tell the story. I know Bauer's going to tell this story tonight, but it encapsulates Freddie's essence and the power of Freddie's message, and the important reason why it is valuable to share these things. Bauer, tell the story of the fellow from Alabama.
Yeah, I think Tom.
He already knew where you were going with that. These guys are on the same page.
Tom's talking about the impact Freddie had and still has on people's lives. Because of the book and the movie, I'm getting contacted every day by people who have some connection to Freddie. And a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from a guy named Jeffrey Rice in Alabama who said that back in 1971, when this happened to Freddie, his mother was a young girl and she was pregnant. She thought she had a cyst on her lower leg. And she went to a doctor and they removed the cyst and then it came back. And then she read a story about Freddie. So she went to another doctor and they removed the cyst, and it turned out to be the same osteogenic sarcoma that Freddie had. She was pregnant at the time, and they said, you know, you're going to lose the baby because of the trauma of the surgery. Her leg was amputated at the knee. She lived 44 years. She didn't lose the baby because Jeffrey Rice is the baby.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We'll leave it right there. Thanks, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. Again, the book is called Freddie Steinmark, Faith, Family, Football, in that order. And the movie that coincides with it is My All-American. It's in theaters now. And the book is, I assume, available Amazon on
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.